Hannah is here to talk about next Tuesday, December the 5th, the Prohibition Repeal Party it's a fundraiser for the Bonner County Historical Society Museum. Give people the nitsy-gritsy about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So it might seem odd to be having an event on a Tuesday in town, but Tuesday, December 5th is the 90th anniversary of the repeal of Prohibition in the United States. So I imagine most of you have a good idea of the basic history of this. So back in 1918, Prohibition was enacted, and this meant that all alcohol sales were illegal in the United States, and that included beer and wine. So this was a big deal. There were a lot of people who worked all day and were used to coming home to a glass of beer. But at the time, there was a big push for temperance, which was not drinking, because of increases in violence and crime that they were seeing and correlating to an increased use of alcohol. So there was a big movement to promote prohibition. And then it was in place for 15 years. So all alcohol sales and consumption were illegal. This was a pretty big deal to the American people. And a lot of people realized once it impacted their lives personally that they weren't a big fan of that kind of restriction. It also in some ways backfired, especially, well, all across the country. But in like big city centers, you would see these crime, I don't know if syndicate is the right word, but these big crime gangs that would develop for the purpose of bootlegging. And bootlegging is illegally importing and distributing alcohol. So people would bring in alcohol from Canada. That's something that we saw. That's something that we saw here because we're so close to the border. I recently heard, I was talking to Mark over at the 219 about this event, and we were thinking of some, he was telling us about some cocktails from that era. And one of them, it's not one of the two we'll be serving, but I love the story. It's called the 12 Mile Limit is the name of the cocktail. And the story comes from the fact that people would take, especially on the Atlantic Ocean, would take cruises. And once you got 12 miles offshore,
no way,
you were in international waters, and they could throw these huge parties with all the alcohol, the whole bar open. And so they had this drink that wound up being called the 12 mile limit as a nod to those cruises.
I don't know if I'd want to be that far out of sight of land with people drinking incredible amounts.
It sounds a little dicey, depending on the size of the boat, at least.
Oh, and look, there's a great white shark. Oh, reach out your hand. So in 1933, 90 years ago, you know, I mean, one of the interesting things is that you know, you have the Prohibition era, but then you have the oxymoron, the Roaring Twenties. You know, you have suppression, and then you have bathtub gym and speakeasies and all sorts of other fun things.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, I mean, that's a direct result of the Prohibition. All of the drinking and imbibing had to go underground. And so that's when the speakeasies came up. And I, yeah, it's kind of funny that the 1920s was the heart of the Prohibition era, but it's also the decade that we most associate with drinking and partying in our history.
Great Gatsby.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, but so it's going to continue on this coming Tuesday.
Yeah. We'll be partying like it's 1933. we're going to be having a big party and fundraiser end of the year celebration at the 219 Lounge. It's going to be next Tuesday from 5:30 until 7:30 in the evening. And it is going to be a private party, so the bar will just be open for this event, but it is open to the public. We do appreciate RSVPs, so you can let us know you want to come by either calling the museum at 208-263-2344 Or you can email us at info@bonnercountyhistory.org. We would love to know that you're coming by, and that'll help us plan for the group that'll be there. We're very excited. We'll have a lot of fun stuff going on. We are encouraging costumes from the era, but they're certainly not required. Just dress up to have a good time. We will be having some wonderful entertainment from Danya Clarine, who's an incredible singer, and she'll be accompanied by Arthur and Peter from Bright Moments. So we'll have, they will be performing music from that era. So 1920s and 30s music. And I know that'll be a blast. I love being able to, you know, dance or listen to that old time music.
And it says here the two drinks that will be served, the Hemingway Daiquiri.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds interesting. And the Brown Derby.
Huh.
I have no idea. I'm sure there's people out there sipping them right now.
Surely.
You know, for breakfast. Yeah, I have no idea. But one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to Google them when the show is a Hemingway Daiquiri.
That one, I think, has no sugar in it because he was diabetic towards the end of his life.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Instead of sugar, a good dose of macho.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
And if you don't get a chance to Google it, we will be telling you all about the history behind those two drinks at the event. But yeah, they were, Mark, when we were talking about them, Mark and Mel were like, oh, these will be, they're different enough, but they both have a good history behind them. So,
and briefly, the money raised goes to where?
Yeah, so all of the money we raise will go toward the museum. We'll be collecting donations, and also a portion of those drink tickets will go back to the museum. That money is going to go into our core programming for the winter. So in the winter, we really slow down, but we do focus primarily on our collection and caring for it. And then we also focus on our education programs. So this is the time of year when we have a lot of school tours coming through the museum. We also send out traveling trunks. Those are fun.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Boxes that have activities and little artifacts that kids can handle. So we can actually send those into the schools, into homeschool groups.
Mm-hmm,
and they have lots
of... A great service.
Yeah, lots of activities they can do and things they can touch, which is exciting for kids, since most of the stuff at the museum you can't touch.
Well, that's when you think of a museum. You know, don't look, but don't touch.
Yeah.
Tell me, do you have a new carpeting over there?
We do, yes. A big thank you to everyone who supported our Spill the Wine event back in September.
That sounds like a prohibition thing.
Yeah, I think you guys called me out last time on the fact that all of our events are alcohol-centric. but we did. We raised enough money to tear out the carpets in our main exhibit area, and we replaced those with several days of hard labor from our incredible volunteers scraping carpet glue and then staining and refinishing the concrete. So it looks really nice now, and it's the perfect platform for our new exhibit, which opened a couple of weeks ago. If you haven't seen it yet, it's called Come What May, We Will Play. It's about all of the ways that Bonner County residents have gotten through hard times, either big things like the Great Depression or personal illness and challenges, through a sense of playfulness and community and finding joy together through through games and connecting with nature. So it's a really special one. There are a lot of interactives in this exhibit, so it's really fun. There are things for little kids all the way up to adults to actually engage with and play with. So, yeah, we're excited to have that open, and this fundraiser will be supporting all supporting kids who are able to come in and visit those that new exhibit as well as our regular ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then also support our collections work, which is the foundation of everything we do at the museum.
We had Olivia on not that long ago, like she might have been like the last guest you were here for, just museum after museum for you, Jim. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Three. Let's say within the last month, I think Olivia was here talking about that new exhibit. Right now we're talking to Hannah Combs. She's the executive director of the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum located over there in Lakeview Park at 611. Ella, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And before actually talking about that new exhibit, do you have a favorite part?
Well, yes, but I love them all. But we had Kim Bailey, who is she's talented with many things, but she does the little felt animals at the farmer's market. And we asked her to make us some felted fish for a game. We have some stories in the exhibit about kids fishing and what that meant to them and different like tough things that it helped them get through. So we have a little interactive for especially little kids where they can go fishing. And we have these magnetic fishing poles and these fish that Kim made. And I was just so delighted when she dropped them off because, you know, I was we were like, we just need some fish for this game. She brought in the most beautiful, detailed, felted fish with, they're all based on local species. They all are embroidered with like the markings of the fish. Cute. They're beautiful. And I have seen so many people really enjoying that and loving to engage with those fish and learn about the different species we have here.
Well, Hannah has a special treat for us, but let's take a music break that we'll set up, and then we can set up what Hannah is going to do. So sit back with your Hemingway daiquiri and your brown derby, make yourself another one, and this is on a week from Saturday at the Panetta Theater. There will be two showings of Barbie, and this is a song that... is in the film several times, and the showing will be at 1:30 and 7 p.m. Doors open 1/2 hour, and if you haven't seen Barbie, this is a good chance to see it. If you've seen it already and you're enthused about it, bring all of your friends. This is also a fundraiser for the food bank. Bring a can of food, and we'll give you a coupon for a small bag of popcorn. And then you can sit back and enjoy Barbie. Here's a song that appears several times in the movie. Play it, Jack.
I'm trying to tell you something about my life. Maybe give me insight between black and white. And the best thing you ever done for me to help me take my life less seriously.
The Indigo Girls with Closer to Fine, a song that is heard several times in the film Barbie that's coming to the Panetta Theater on December the 9th.
That's from 1989.
Apparently. Yes, it's from 1989. I think on the Indigo Girls' first album, self-titled. But when Barbie and other characters leave Barbie Land, this song is played.
Nice.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. That's a good song, too.
Oh, one of the best.
Yeah. It's older than I thought. I think of that as like a 90s song.
But not as old as the Prohibition.
That's true. Hannah Combs is here. She's the executive director of the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. Coming up on Tuesday, December 5th at the 219 Bar Tavern at 219 First Avenue here in Sandpoint.
Lounge. It's called
The Lounge. The Lounge. Okay, thank you. The 219 Lounge.
But I like all your other words.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. the Prohibition Repeal Party, the 90th anniversary of Prohibition, is a fundraiser for the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum. You can check it out on Tuesday at the 219. Hannah is going to read to us now from what's the name of the book here?
Yeah, I'm going to read part of a short story I recently ran across in the book K'nixu, Stories of the Northwest by Thomas F. Lacey.
Okay. How would you like to introduce this?
Yeah, so this is a story I recently read by chance, and I love the tie-in to the Prohibition era. I think this will give you a taste of what this time period would have felt like right here in Bonner County. So this is a story he wrote from his childhood about his family on a weekend trip to Priest Lake. So he starts the chapter, this is chapter 3, The Gentleman, and he starts this chapter by telling about the quirky personalities of his dad, his mom, his aunt, his maiden aunt, as he says, he and his sister, who are all traveling in this car between Newport and Priest River. And the things you need to know are his dad is a speed demon. He's very excited about this new car. His mother and aunt are very chatty, and his dad calls them the Cherry Sisters for some reason he doesn't understand. And then he and his sister Jeanette are sitting in the back of the car on their way toward Priest River. So I'm going to jump in at that point. It was Jeanette who first saw the black dot far down the highway that soon took on the shape of an open touring car with top down. As we drew closer to the car, we could see that the hood was up and two men were peering into the engine. Father, I'm sure, was sorely tempted to go on. Lose not a moment. But the rule of the road at that time was to stop for anyone with car trouble. He slowed and pulled to a stop behind their car. One of the men wore a chauffeur's uniform, but from the bulk of him, the puffiness around the eyes and ears, the ham hands, he seemed to be more than just a chauffeur. The other man wore navy serge trousers, a crisp white shirt, and black tie. I remember him as being tall, blonde, and good-looking. He walked over to our car and introduced himself. Close up, we could see that the shirt was French cuffed with diamond cufflinks, a man out of place in this wild country. He smiled warmly and said, I'm James Tracy. Surely appreciate your stopping. Have had nothing but trouble with this Maxwell. I'm Bert Lacey. Anything we can do for you? Father asked. Get help? Drive you back to Newport? No, no, he replied. I've already sent word to my garage. If you are going as far as Priest River, though, I'd appreciate a ride. I'm in a bit of a hurry to get there. Of course. Glad to oblige, Father replied. First, let me get my suit coat and have a word with my chauffeur. Only take a moment. Father told me to get him back, and I squeezed my skinny frame between Mother and Aunt Grace. My, what a gentleman. Handsome, too, don't you think, Grace? Yes, she said demurely. Tracy, Tracy, you don't suppose he could be related to our minister, do you? Yes, he does have that same nice, polite manner, doesn't he? Mother replied. Tracy and his chauffeur seemed to be arguing over something, but whatever it was, they soon came to some agreement. Tracy lifted his coat off the back seat, slipped it on, and returned to our car. We had gone but a short way when a car with several men in it pulled abreast of us. As usual, Father floored the gas pedal, determined not to eat their dust, as he liked to say. The other driver was just as determined to let us eat his dust, and off we raced down the highway. Give her the gun, Tracy cried, and in rising enthusiasm, warming to the race, run him into the ground! We raced neck and neck, both drivers leaning tensely forward, striving for some small advantage. Father tried the weave and swerve. Jeanette screamed. I shouted, don't let him pass us! Mother cried, Bert, for heaven's sake, slow down! But he hung on grimly, edging ahead slightly, and then the road took a sharp left. Both drivers hit the brakes to prevent floating off into the open prairie. Dust boiled over us as we sliced around the curve. Being on the inside, the other driver had the advantage. He recovered faster and moved half a length ahead, and the race was over. The dust was so thick it completely shut off Father's vision, and he had to stop or run off the road. Tracy, apparently sharing with Father the humiliation and pain of defeat, offered consolation. We'd have had them but for the curve. We were ahead going in, Mother whispered to Aunt Grace. We're lucky to be alive. Ignoring the Cherry Sisters' whisperings, Father said to his newfound partner, We just ran out of road. I had him cold. The road left the open prairie and entered the forested hills that lay along the south bank of the Pendere River. Pine and cedar and hemlock crowded close upon its shoulders, cutting off the sunlight. There were deep ravines, the road winding with frequent hairpin turns. It was cool, quiet, and foreboding. At the Washington-Idaho border, the car that passed us was blocking the road. Standing beside the car were three big, grim-faced men. Two were armed with sawed-off shotguns. It looked like a holdup. There was no alternative but to stop. They'd laid a neat trap. The road was too narrow to squeeze around the blockade, too late to turn back. We waited, tense, as the largest of the men lumbered over to us, closely followed by his armed cohorts. In the back seat, we were too fearful to move. Jeanette and I tightly held Mother's hands as she whispered in our ears not to be afraid. "Cole," the leader said to Father in a deprecating way, "when did you and Tracy team up?" "Easy to anger," Father replied harshly. "My name is Bert Lacey, and who are you?" "I'm the sheriff, and you still look like Cole to me." Father reached into his hip pocket, pulled out his wallet, took out a business card, and thrust it at the sheriff. "Here's my business card. I'm the advertising manager for the two Spokane newspapers, the Spokesman Review and the Chronicle." "If you're not Cole, why are you with Tracy? How long have you known him?" "Isn't it obvious?" Father replied sharply. "His car broke down and I'm giving him a ride to Priest River." "You do know who he is, don't you?" "As far as I know, he's a businessman in Newport." "And Priest River, and Spokane, and Sandpoint, and probably Coeur d'Alene and points in between. He's a bootlegger. And how do I know you're not in cahoots with him? You tried hard enough to get away." "I was merely trying to avoid eating your dust. I'm going to have to go through your bags, make sure you're not making a bootleg run to Priest River." Growing angrier with each insulting insinuation and each moment of delay, Father blurted out, "I'm a respected member of the First Presbyterian Church, a law-abiding citizen, so be careful with your accusations. You can search our bags, but don't go getting anything dirty." The sheriff and his two men pawed through our bags, then ordered us out of the car and lifted the seats out and looked under them. They lifted the hood and peered into every nook and cranny, thrust their hands into the darkened recesses. They peered under the car, under the fenders, but couldn't find a single bottle. "Okay," the sheriff said, "you're clean. I ought to run you in for reckless driving. If it weren't for your family, I would." Then the three stormed over to their car, leaving the mess for us to straighten out. I watched as they sped off toward Newport. Standing quietly off to the side until this moment, Tracy came over to Father and said, "I suppose you won't want me to ride with you any farther." Still angered, Father shot a furrowed look at Tracy, staring hard and long. He seemed torn by his loathing for the sheriff and his principles of right and wrong, the red neck and sensitive bullying of the sheriff, and the act of bootlegging. Finally, his face softening, he said gently, "We're wasting time. Get in the car." Tracy, showing humiliation, took his place in the front seat. He sat quietly for a long time, pondering the explosive recent events. But slowly the gloom lifted. Mother and Aunt Grace resumed their chattering. Father and Tracy, forgetting the difference in their principles, were soon submerged in lighthearted banter, enumerating the details of the great race. They laughed over the prospect of sharing a cell in the county jail. The one for bootlegging, the other for racing with the county sheriff. Sister Jeanette and I laughed with them, not quite knowing why. Then Tracy, in rising good humor, reached into the inside pocket of his suit coat and pulled out a half-pint silver flask and said, "They couldn't search my person or I'd have been in trouble." Turning to Father, he offered, "Care for a drink?" "No, thanks," Father declined. Then, making clear his moral stand, added, "I don't drink." Tracy extended the flask to Mother and Aunt Grace and asked if they'd care for a drink. Both demurely declined, Mother showing shock, and Aunt Grace a trace of pleasure at being offered a drink by a man, an attractive, roguish man. Tracy then turned back to Father and said, "Would you mind if I had a drink?" "No, it's your choice. But remember the children," he added, lowering his voice. Tracy took a quick, appreciative swallow and returned the flask to his pocket. He and Father continued talking, both enjoying each other's company. Father obviously liked this Robin Hood who so boldly challenged the authorities. Suddenly, Tracy erupted in laughter. Father asked, "What's so funny?" "The sheriff thinking you were Cole." Then taking a long look at Father, he said, "You know, there is a resemblance. Your high forehead, your gray eyes, your ruddy complexion." Father chuckled at the thought, enjoying a moment of wickedness. And then he asked in growing curiosity, "What was that all back there?" "Oh, when I returned to my apartment early this morning, I found that it had been ransacked. The sheriff, I'm sure, was hoping to catch me with a stash of Canadian whiskey. It comes down the trails above Upper Priest Lake, by mule string or backpack at night. I sell only the best. Brings the top prices and profits. When I found that my apartment had been broken into, I knew it was getting too hot for me in Newport and time to move the operation to my headquarters in Priest River. Idaho's wide open, little chance of being bothered there. But the big money's made in Washington, in Spokane. As soon as things cool down, 3-4 months, I'll move back. But not Newport. Dishman, Chatteroy, or Opportunity. Near Spokane. Sounds like a risky business to me, Father said. Not really. I hop back and forth across the border. Keep a step ahead of the law. Sorry you were involved. We were approaching the point in the road where it would plunge down to the Pendre River, a hill so steep it reminded me of the first drop of the amusement park roller coaster. It quickened the pulse, put butterflies in the stomach, because at the bottom there was a sharp turn to the right. Several cars' brakes had failed on this hill over the years, and the cars with their passengers plunged into the river. Like a nightmare, images of our brakes failing, Father slicing into the earth embankments, throwing the car into reverse, the gears burning out, the car out of control, flashed through my mind. Involuntarily, my feet pressed hard against the floor. I closed my eyes to the awesome sight. And then I felt the car plunge down the hill, slow at the bottom, sweep around the steeply banked curve, onto an iron bridge, and strum across its corrugated metal floor. I opened my eyes to Main Street, Priest River, its boardwalks marching down each side. The walls were lined with lumberjacks, miners, and itinerant workers who had bedrolls containing all their earthly goods suspended from their shoulders with rope. Every other building held a bar or body house. Mother called them houses of ill repute, or both, that catered to these rough men. Tracy asked to be let out at a gaudy red two-story building with shiny brass door plate and fittings and red velvet drapes billowing out the open windows of its second floor. As he stepped from the car, he reached into a side pocket of his trousers and pulled out a fat roll of bills, peeled off a 20, and offered it to Father. "For the ride and your trouble," he said. "Thanks, but it's not necessary," Father declined. A $20 bill, then, was a sound $20 and important money, but I suppose Father wished to keep things on a friendly basis and not dishonor his convictions with hypocrisy. Tracy then asked if he couldn't give the boy and girl each a silver dollar. "For soda pop, candy, and perhaps a movie." Father nodded his approval, and we eagerly stretched out our hands to accept the shiny silver dollars, envisioning all the things they'd buy. Tracy turned and strolled through the door of the red-fronted building. We never saw Tracy again. I've wondered if the red-fronted building was his Priest River headquarters. I've often wondered, too, if he were ever caught.
Hannah Combs, you're a wonderful reader.
Oh, thank you.
I was thinking that as well.
Yeah. You're listening to The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. That was Hannah Combs, the executive director of Bonner County Historical Society and Museum, reading a story by Thomas Lacey. Do you know that this was a true story? Of course, this was not a fictional account. This really happened.
Yeah, I haven't read the entire book, but it is a book of, it's a memoir essentially, telling different stories from growing up in this area back in that time.
He's a great writer too.
Yeah, I really enjoyed just the way he sets the scene and develops the pace and the action and the excitement. I think you really get a sense of what it would have felt like, especially as a kid, witnessing something like this back in that time.
The imagery at the end there of Priest River is so different from the town that we know today, you know, to think of that. I don't know. I wonder where they were, what building that was that he got into.
I know. I haven't researched that yet. But so they're talking about driving along the river on the south side of the Pendre River. So the highway goes along the north side of the river. Uh-huh. That's the way most of us drive if we head over toward Priest River or Newport.
Yeah.
But I have driven on that south side road, and I know exactly the point he's talking about with that drop and that sharp turn, and you just feel, I've driven it in the winter, I'm like, oh my god, I'm going straight into the river, this is terrifying. So it's kind of funny that still feels the same 100 years later.
The name of the person, Tracy, is that a real person? Do we know anything? Has he ever come up in any newspaper articles or anything?
I've never seen his name in our newspapers, but and it does say that he was operating in standpoint. So if I mm-hmm. dug deeply, there's probably a chance. But it does mm-hmm. sound like he was pretty good at not being caught.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing if we looked into some of the Spokane papers, there might be a better chance of finding more out mm-hmm. about him.
And this is all within the context of next Tuesday, December the 5th, the Prohibition Repeal Party. 90-year celebration of the repeal of the... What number amendment?
18? I can't remember.
I can't remember either. At the 219 Lounge, going from 5:30 to 7:30, there's no entrance ticket, but RSVPs are appreciated because that way they know the number of people to expect. And you can call 208-263-2344. And let them know how many in your party, or go to info@bonnercountyhistory.org and sign up there. Costumes are encouraged. Performing will be Dawn Clarine and Bright Moments.
Yeah, we're so excited to have them performing at the event. They're going to do all music from the 1920s and 30s. So it'll really set the scene and you'll feel like you're back in that time.
90 years ago. And the signature cocktails, the Hemingway Daiquiri and the Brown Derby. Anything else you want to mention? That's a great story to set up the context. One of the things I think of is that era, is the great characters it produced, you know, in terms of the to live in an environment where you once had alcohol, no longer do, and now it's coming back.
Yeah, and another thing I love about this story is it's so easy to just stereotype, like, what a bootlegger is like, or different people from that era. But I love how nuanced these characters are, especially the father, who, you know, is a prohibition man himself. He doesn't drink, but he also would find it so... rude to leave someone on the side of the road, even if they're a roguish bootlegger. So, and I love that everyone's secretly really enjoying the company of this man because he brings a little bit of wildness into their lives.
Well, when you think of bootlegging, you think of Chicago, Al Capone, the Untouchables, that sort of thing, Elliot Ness, and not realizing that out here in North Idaho and Eastern Washington, there was activity going on as well.
Mm-hmm. Coming over the border on a mule train.
Oh, can you imagine that?
How about that? Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, that border is still, I mean, you can walk right into Canada to this day. It's kind of, always amusing to me, I guess.
But what boggles my mind is clunky bottles. You know, it's not like, you know, a pound of grass that you're crossing over the border with. You know, I mean, you're talking about volume and weight and the bottles don't fold, they don't fit nicely in.
People got really creative with how they transported booze back then. We have just this fascinating photo in the museum collection of a bootlegging operation that was seized, and they have all of these pig carcasses lined up, which, sorry if this is gross to some of you, but they had basically made it look like they were just hauling meat, but they had actually stuffed each of the pigs with a bunch of bottles to help muffle the sound of the transportation. So people got really creative with how they tried to evade the authorities while bootlegging.
Very interesting. And I would love to learn more, and I guess we can on Tuesday.
Absolutely.
Anything else we need to talk about as far as museum business coming up?
Well, I do just want to give a big thank you to the 219 Lounge for hosting us.
You bet.
It's a great venue for this type of event, and we're very grateful to partner with them on this. Otherwise, we are open. You know, it's a quiet time of year, but if you have family coming in for the holidays or before the holidays, stop by. The museum is open Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 4. We also have our first free Saturday coming up. And we will be open until That is, oh my goodness, that's this weekend.
Like right soon.
Like yeah. 2 days from now. Yeah, we'll be open from 10 to 2. This month is sponsored by Eva Whitehead, who's one of our great volunteers. So we're excited if you can't usually make it in during the week, that day is for you. So stop by and see the new exhibit.
Hannah, we want to thank you. As always, it's a joy to have you with us.
It's always a pleasure.
And be careful out there and embrace your shovel.
I will try to do that.
We're going to do a music break and then come back and talk about some upcoming events this weekend here in Sandpoint in the area. This song was released on this date in 1968. How can one not like this song?
Mm-hmm.
Sly and the Family Stone with Everyday People from their album Stand with an exclamation point. This song was released on this date in 1968.
68, yes.
68.
I haven't looked it up yet, but I'm pretty sure that in my trivia bank, I'm pretty sure that's the only Billboard number one hit that anybody played at Woodstock.
Oh, isn't that a little neat little bit of trivia?
Yeah, I think so. With all those bands there and everything, but that was the only one that was a big pop hit, I think. I'll check that out.
One of the things I would, one of the things that I'm getting little signals is that you never find their music either. Their appearance played or a list of songs, but Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Uh-huh.
I wonder what they performed, and that might be someone who, a group that might have had, but I don't know.
Yeah.
But you never find anything about Creedence Clearwater Revival.
At
Woodstock.
At Woodstock? Mm-hmm. I knew that they were there, but yeah, I don't know much.
You never see any footage. You never hear of a set list.
Huh. Let's see here. Yeah, I can't find it. But let's assume I'm right.
Yeah,
everybody.
Yeah. I mean, just hold your microphone next to your screen and let people look while you need to introduce and make talk about the KRFY Panhandle Community Radio Winter Fun.
Fun Drive.
And then Fund Drive, December the 2nd, which is this Saturday, to the 9th, the following Saturday.
Bob kicks us off, as he so often does.
Just plain Bob.
He'll be here on Saturday night, and that will be the first act in our multi-act saga, the Winter Fun Drive. And I think you, Jim, a little bird told me that you're among the second acts. You're coming in on Sunday morning.
Yes. So, Bernie Mosier is going to come in with Susie Prez on Sunday morning. And then Bernie has to exit. And I have nothing to do on Sundays but to come down here and play tunes.
And we have listeners on Sundays. We know that. So
yes.
And we'll have a little company this Sunday.
And so I'm just going to put together a list of music right now that is... for example, I just finished an entire book by Greil Marcus on Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone.
You did?
Yep. That just a whole book on that single song and how it was created.
Huh.
And
I love that song. I know a little bit about it.
It's considered the best song ever written. And when he went into the studio and began it, he didn't have anything done. It was all... Let's try this now. Mm-hmm. Let's try this. And it was sort of creativity being bombarded in this one single moment. So, but tell me about the rest of the week. What's going to happen?
we're doing what's happening the rest of the week is all of our regularly scheduled programs will be on. We're not interrupting our syndicated shows or Autos Eclectic Mix or anything like that. Okay. But if you have a live show on 88.5 KRFY, well then it will be live that week, and we'll have folks here standing by on the telephones, and people will be playing their usual assortment of music, but with an eye towards talking about the radio station and talking about their show on a more personal level. You can hear a little bit more about when, for example, when you tune into the folk show, you might hear Jim talk about how he got started
with
on the folk show.
Music and how I have sustained myself throughout the years.
And we have assigned various other DJs to come in as guests on these programs, so we can, so people have somebody to talk to and to answer the questions of. And as well, you can call in and maybe you have a question for a DJ yourself.
Absolutely.
Or just a comment.
Or a request.
Mm-hmm.
Briefly, Jack, explain where the money goes to, why it's important that we are having a fund drive.
This radio station relies entirely on donations from individuals and our underwriters, which are primarily local businesses.
Bless their souls.
Yes. And you can hear our, if the local underwriters, you'll hear their messages throughout the day. We thank them during Otto's Eclectic Mix and other times during the day. But this radio station does not receive any money from, say, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting or NPR or anything like that. And in fact, we have to pay. We do not get money. We actually have to pay money to broadcast some of the shows that we get from the Pacifica Foundation. They're very generous, and it's a modest fee, but it's the money goes out. It doesn't come in. So
we need money for insurance. We need money for equipment. We need money to pay rights to ASCAP and BMI for the, I mean, we can play all the music we want, but it's not for free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that somehow, some way, music needs to get, the money, finances needs to get back to the artists. So
we are, your DJs are volunteer DJs, so they do not need to be paid, but they do need working equipment. They need training. They need support from.
We just need love.
Yeah.
Financial love.
Exactly. And community radio is, I would say, important. It's something that serves one specific area, and the goal of community radio is a little different than commercial radio. It's a combination of giving people entertainment value and information that they can't get elsewhere, and also providing access to the airwaves for organizations like, for example, the Bonner County Historical Society and Museum.
I was just going to say, on commercial radio, I doubt if you would have had the opportunity to hear that passage that Hannah just read that dovetails into the Prohibition Party. And we can do that here.
We can.
We love to support organizations and individuals who are improving the quality of life here.
Yeah.
In North Idaho and the area.
It's a wonderful thing. It's a privilege to be able to do it. And the radio station needs your support to continue doing it. And so at this time of year, we're getting to the end of it. And if you have a little bit of extra change in your coffers that you're feeling generous with, consider making a donation to Panhandle Community Radio. And if you're already considering it,
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. And consider making a call during your favorite show. Let folks know that this is that, you know, let your favorite DJ know that you're out there listening and supporting because operators will be standing by.
I don't know about people, listeners out there, but I know about me. I've reached a certain age where I don't need another sweater, or I don't need another pair of socks, or I don't. So. Mm-hmm. Whoever is giving that to you, ask them, hey, would you mind giving a donation in my name to, like, KRFY or any other organization, the food bank?
This is 88.5
K-R-F-Y Pondere.
That's right. Is that Julie?
No, that's that is a boy who probably sounds nothing like that anymore. That's Tom, what is it? Tom, I can't remember his last name. Tom Carty, I think.
Probably way back when.
Yep. I think he was in seventh or eighth grade when he recorded that. And I think he's...
I love it. I love it.
He's not... Doesn't sound like that anymore.
Jack.
We're out of time.
We're out of time. Don't forget the Nutcracker this weekend at the Panetta Theater, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Go to panetta.org. Hear about Allegro Dance Studios and the Nutcracker.
Barbie is going to be great. And folks should attend that. But if you've already seen it 8 times and you're done and you want to go do something else
in the little theater.
Right next door in the little theater, you can come and attend in person our live radio show, which will kind of be the grand finale of our winter fun drive. We have at least 4 musical acts and at least 3 spoken word performances, and it'll be a holiday celebration live in the little theater. We'll broadcast it here on 88.5 KRFY. That's 7 o'clock. You can buy tickets at panetta.org.
And that's a week from this Saturday, the 9th. But I do want to remind Jack that it's not an either or. You can go to the 1:30 showing of Barbie, and in the evening go to the KRFY Little Theater event.
I love a movie matinee. That's a great idea.
I love Barbie. Jack, it's always be good, and we'll be able to remind people next Thursday. Happy end of November. Happy end of 11/12 of 2023.
Hey.
Whoosh.
There it goes. You can hear it right now. Snow's coming, folks. December Yahoo! Is tomorrow, and it looks like it's going to start out white. All right. Let's listen to Bird Note and then Otis Collective.
And thank you, Anna. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's Los Lobos, a great L.A. band doing a Grateful Dead, a cover of a Grateful Dead song called Big Bertha, Don't You Come Around Here Anymore. This is Jim Healy, and Jack is across from me running the board. The hour went by so quickly, and there was a notice that I promised a local playwright that I would read, and I plumb forgot, so excited about the Prohibition Party, about Barbie, about Nutcracker, about the snow. What else did we get so caught up in?
Oh, Jack? Everything. Thanksgiving. We did everything. The whole thing.
So, Teresa, this is for Teresa Pesci. There are going to be auditions for a play. We don't have the exact date set in April yet because the Panetta calendar is not that ready yet. But on this Tuesday from 6:30 to 8:30 on this December the 5th. So what you can do at 5:30, you can go over to the Prohibition Party at the 219 and get a couple Hemingway daiquiris in you. And then go over to the audition for Sherlock, an original play by Teresa Pesci. It'll be held in the Panetta Little Theater on Tuesday, December 5th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Scripts for scenes will be provided. Performance dates in the Panetta Main Theater are planned for the second and third weekends in April 2024. There's going to be a cast of 12 characters. And if you're interested, show up and have fun. Do a reading. Maybe a couple of those Hemingway daiquiris will unleash the performance gene in you. Okay. So, Teresa, I did it. That auditions for Sherlock next Tuesday, 6:30 to 8:30 in the Little Theater. What's the next song coming up?
Oh, good question. We have, a Keb Mo song.
Oh, Keb Mo. Keb Mo's been here at the festival at Sandpoint.
And this is his cover of Folsom Prison Blues.
Oh, Johnny Cash.
Yeah. Are you going to be in Sherlock? Are you going to?
I am not. No? I am not. I love radio because nobody can, outside of you, looking across the table here at me, I can be invisible. I'm just a disembodied voice going out into that vast black hole out there. I don't mean North Idaho is a black hole. I mean just that vastness out there. So, no, I don't like people looking at me. Are you going to audition?
I don't think so. No.
Okay.
No, but it's
we don't want to take roles away from other people.
That's right.
We want to include other members in the community.
Yeah. No, that does sound like it's going to be a good show, though.
Yes.
And folks should audition.
And it's in the big theater. I mean, Teresa wrote Retirement is Murder, and it had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 performances, and they were all sellouts.
Yeah.
You couldn't get a ticket at all. So this one is going to be in the big theater called Sherlock, and it has to deal with that Sherlock character whom we all know about, and Moriarty and Watson and everything like that.
Cool. Here's Cap Mo with Folsom Prison Blues. You're listening to 88.5 KRFY.